In the city of Gotham, darkness is rising. Organized crime is rampant, and the citizens cry out for a hero to save them. But from the shadows, that hero was born. His path to becoming the savior of Gotham has begun. But as the Joker's reign of terror grows, and new threats emerge from the shadows and in a city where no one can be trusted, even the Dark Knight will be pushed to his limits. With stunning action sequences, complex characters, and an unforgettable performance by Heath Ledger as the Joker, The Dark Knight is the ultimate battle of good versus evil. Will Batman rise to become the hero that Gotham needs? Find out in The Dark Knight.
Hello there and welcome to It's How Old? The Pop Culture Show. Well, we celebrate some of pop culture's icons' biggest birthdays. I'm your host, Mark, and in this seasonal podcast, we're going to dig deep into five of my, I want to say favourite, but I would actually go a little bit further and say most nostalgic movies that are celebrating big old birthdays this year. You don't have to listen to these in any particular order because, well, that's boring, isn't it? So, enjoy this episode where myself and a very good friend of mine discuss the 2008 Christopher Nolan superhero epic, The Dark Knight. But you can also dig in using your podcast app of choice to find episodes on Return of the Jedi, Superman, the movie, Man of Steel, and, of course, Jurassic Park. Each of these movies celebrating a tentpole birthday in 2023. If you want to get involved, give us a shout. It's How Old over on Twitter. And if you enjoy the podcast, tell your friends that they can also listen at itshowold.com. Now, before I bring on my wonderful co-host, just a quick recap of the format of the show. We're going to go through, very quickly recap the movie. And I mean, very quickly recap the movie. We're going to talk about the impact on myself and my co-host. And we're going to talk about first impressions. We're going to give it a rating as if we just watched this movie when it came out. I'm going to talk about the cast, the highs, the lows, the standouts, the VFX, the sound effects, the soundtrack, how this has aged. And then we're going to revisit our scores and give it a score as if we'd just walked out of the theatre today. It's a fantastic bit of fun, and I'm excited to dig into The Dark Knight here today with you. But without further ado, I am a huge Batman fan, but I am overshadowed by my good friend joining me on this episode. It is the one, the only Batman himself, Mr. Neil Gulati from Wild Style Media. How are you, my friend? Welcome to It's How Old.
You are too good to me, man.
Oh, well, I speak the truth like all good Batmen do.
I don't know if I'm a bigger fan than you. You're something else. Once I met you, I kind of felt like, okay, I need to step my game up. But I'm excited to talk about this movie, man. It's almost 15, or it is turning 15 years old. I've watched it numerous times, so I cannot wait to dive in with you. I love the Batman since I was a young kid.
Oh, I love it, man. I'm so excited. And let's actually just flash our minds back to 2008. I like to do this on every single episode, and it throws up some really interesting things, right? So 2008 doesn't feel that long ago. It was 15 years ago, which is, on one hand, feels like yesterday. But on the other hand, you think, when I decided to put The Dark Knight into this season, I was like, what the hell? How is The Dark Knight 15 years old? And then in a couple of years' time, man, you and me are going to be back here discussing why Batman Begins is 20 years old, which freaks me right out. But, you know, if you go back to 2008, it's not like some of the other movies that we've had in this season of It's How Old. It's not too dissimilar to now in terms of the pop culture landscape. Will Smith, he was the top grossing actor in the world. Shia LaBeouf, all right, granted, maybe not so much. But outside of The Dark Knight, which as we know was the highest grossing movie of the year, we were looking at things like Hancock, Indiana Jones. We're in a year where we've had another Indiana Jones. Kingdom of the Crystal Skull came out in 08. We've just had Dial of Destiny this year. But also the big one, which I wouldn't say it surprised me, but it made me reflect in a similar way to this. Iron Man, of course.
Oh yeah, one of my favorites.
The MCU. Yeah, absolutely, man. And it was such a good year. The biggest songs of 2008, Viva La Vida, Coldplay, You Somebody, Kings of Leon. We had songs. Black and Gold. And, you know, this doesn't feel that long ago. So when I first reached out to you, bro, were you a bit freaked out that it's 15 years old?
I was. When you asked me, I thought we were going to talk about, you know, any of the older original ones, maybe the 89 one or, you know, I never even thought of this trilogy as old in my mind, you know, but then once I started watching it again and I started doing a little homework, I'm like, wow, man, like it really has been a little bit since, and that's the second one in the trilogy. It's not even the first one. That was what, 2005. So yeah, you threw me off a little bit, but I love it, man. I think it's one of the best trilogies. So I'm excited to dive in.
Yeah, I agree. I agree, my friend. All right, let's have a very quick recap of the movie opening just after Batman Begins, which of course closed with that little Easter egg of the Joker card. I'll look into it. Mm-hmm. Will you? How are you going to trace it? It's not got a telephone number on it, Bruce. But that got us all excited. Opens up with a fantastic opening sequence and introduces us to a chaotic version of the Joker, which we're going to dig into a little bit later. It essentially brings us a way more complex look at Gotham, at the morality of being a superhero, at the morality of being a villain, at what it takes to become a villain. There's a big undercurrent, a subtext of things like the Killing Joke in there. You know, all it takes is that one bad day. And it essentially runs us through the way that Batman has affected Gotham City, its criminals, its policing, and how all it takes is someone that is willing, as Alfred, to paraphrase, Alfred says, someone that's willing to watch the world burn, to tear even this new up-and-coming structure to pieces. It's a wonderful film. It's a wonderfully written piece of Nolan cinema and cinema overall. So, like, what was this like for you when you first saw it? I want to get to the out of the theater in 2008 rating in a minute for both of us, but just, can you remember what it felt like to see this for the first time?
And as a
Batman fan as well, because Batman's huge to you. How did it feel?
Yeah, listen, for me, when I say a massive Batman, I really relate to the character because of the fact that he doesn't have superpowers but can do so much. And I remember very specifically when this movie was in theaters, I decided to see it in the biggest theater possible. And what caught my eye immediately, not my eye, my ear, was the opening music, the opening, that annoying sound effect, just letting you know something was not right, right? I know, I'm sure you remember how it is. Opens with that annoying sort of noise leading up to the joke or whatever. But I just remember going, oh man, this is not going to look like any other one prior. It just the way it opened visibly looked so grand. It looked bigger. They opened with that huge opening, you know, panoramic wide scene. So yeah, I remember just going, OMG, I can't wait to see what Batman, the car, the visuals will look like if the intro is this epic. You know what I mean? That was my initial thought when I first went in the theaters.
Yeah, the dissonance. I think that's a really good. It's one of those things. I don't think I'd consciously clocked it. Like I'd clocked it. I knew there was something off, but until you've just said it, I didn't realize it was that audible dissonance that is in there. Yeah. The way that links to the chaotic version of the Joker and the way that even the chaos that Gotham is under at the minute, you know, in order to set the scene for the White Knight in Harvey and the Dark Knight in Bruce. And that's a fascinating insight, mate. And, you know, Batman for me, I know it'd be the same as you. I'm a huge fan. You know, I've read every Batman comic from the Starling days, Jim Starlin, right up to probably like Rebirth in 2016. Read everything, you know, cost me a marriage, but it was fucking worth it. You know, so it's one of those. And it was,
I think, me too.
And here we are. Who's having the last laugh? Yeah, he was last and all that. Thanks, Joker. But it's something that I want to get to in the characterizations in a little while, because every generation has a Batman. Every generation has a Joker. Every generation has a version of these characters that they call their own. And there's so many people that say, well, that's not Batman. You know, I was a little bit like that in Dark Knight Rises. You know, Batman quit over a girl. Batman would not quit over a girl. Like, I was pissed about that for 5 years. And then I went back and rewatched the trilogy and think, oh, okay, we got some context.
I get it now.
Yeah, that was it. And that probably took age on my part to get that. But it was such an impactful movie, because I think for the first time in my mind as well, it showed that you
You could, a lot more than Batman Begins, you could take Batman and put him in a setting that is genuinely not that far off what we live in.
Yes.
And it would work for the most part. It like 99% works. There's a couple of things where you think, oh, physics would probably have something to say about that. But generally,
yeah,
this thing kind of works. And I think it departed from Batman Begins in that way, because Batman Begins, it's like they tried to make Gotham, Gotham. And the next two, they were just like, daylight's fine. It's Chicago. We don't have to make it dirty and grimy and scary. Yeah, and
for sure.
For a long time, that sort of freaked me out, man, because I was like, well, Gotham should be a character like in the Arkham games and in the comics. I want to be scared of Gotham so that I feel like I need this protector. A little bit like the Pattinson movie. How did you feel about, when we'll get to the rating in the set, but how did you feel, because you'll have been like me, come off Batman Begins, come off 89. How did you feel about that brighter aesthetic?
Yeah, no, for sure. Listen, I'm glad you touched on that, because that was what I initially talked about, that opening, that unique style that right away told me we're not in that foggy, dark, asylum-looking Gotham. I'm right away, like you said, it's a city, it's Chicago, if you don't know this, if you're not a fan like us. But I liked it right away. Like anybody, when you're used to something, you immediately go, oh man, I hope they don't mess this up. But at the same time, because Hans Zimmer is a genius, and because the moment it starts, like the best word you said was dissonance. That's the word I wish I knew to say. It already set the tone of different right out the gate. It, you know, most Batman start with chaos. Like it starts with something happening and he's just diving right in. So I really liked the aesthetic. I liked the change in pace. I liked the eerie tone. And I knew I was in for a ride. Like I knew this one's going to be special. And we all know once you see the Joker, it is the most special probably of all.
Yeah, it really is. And I think that influences so many people's ratings of this as well. So the way that I like to do this, it's interesting. So I want to get your rating of The Dark Knight. Had you, and if you can cast your mind back to how you might have felt, you know, walking out of that theater 2008, what you would have rated it then. Then once we've dug a little bit deeper, we've revisited some things, I want to give you another chance, and I'll do the same of, had we just seen this today, for the first time, but with all the world knowledge we've got, we've watched all of the MCU, we've watched everything else Nolan's done, all the other Batmans, like how would we score it today if we saw it for the first time? So I think that's an interesting lens. So 2008, Neil, has just finished watching his Will Smith movie. He's just been listening to your Kings of Leon, and he's nipped in to see The Dark Knight. He stepped out. What did he think? How did he rate it?
So I'll be truthful. As a standard Batman fan, I will, you expect me to say 10, but what I felt was 10 for Heath Ledger. As far as the overall movie, because it ended up being darker, eerier, almost a little bit mentally odd. I don't know. It felt challenging. I remember kind of walking out commenting, I'm not sure how much I love it. So I would honestly say, Heath Ledger 10, the movie was like a 7.5. And it wasn't because it wasn't a great movie. It was that it was so different that it challenged me as a fan that was spoiled and used to how things are. So I think I rated it a little lower because it was just weird to me. It was a weird vibe and I left with like an eeriness of this movie. I mean, think about briefly, even when Batman like goes into the cell with him, right? And you think he's about to whoop his, you know what I mean? Like, that's not the Batman we know, right? He doesn't do this level of intensity. So that felt weird for me coming from growing up as a child, watching Adam West and watching, you know, the 1989 Batman where they don't really kill. Then he's not going to really beat somebody down. So this movie just put me in a position of a new Batman. Like he could potentially go off the edge. So I rated it a little lower. But as far as Heath Ledger, I literally walked out saying that guy better get an Oscar. That was amazing.
Dude, I am on such a similar page with that one. I written down last night, as I was making some more notes on this, put my ratings down. I put an 8 for the same reason. Heath Ledger 10, without a shadow of a doubt. And I put an 8, and it was very similar reasons. But it was also about that, like, Gotham wasn't necessarily the character that we used to Gotham City's playing. But it was interesting because it didn't need to be in hindsight, which we'll get to a little bit later. And it was, it was very similar reasons. And it was also, for me, that Batman was almost like the supporting character.
Yeah.
And it was the Joker movie, which I mind far less now because it was the more I look at this, and again, this will probably reflect in the score later, I feel that these movies are way more about Batman the idea and Batman the Batman,
yes,
as opposed to Bruce Wayne,
yes,
the Batman, you know?
Absolutely.
But I was the same, mate. I don't know if I couldn't just quite digest it because it was such a scale, you know?
No, you couldn't be more right. And then, of course, the obvious one that a lot of people joked about was his voice. I was struggling a little bit with when he did sort of the raspiness. I felt like, huh? There were so many different things that I think Nolan was playing with, expanding the world of Batman for us, the crazed fans. I think that anytime someone gives you something, it's almost like remaking a classic hit song. You love it. You know, you're familiar with it, but oh man, they changed it. And the reality is they didn't really mess it up. They just gave you another version. I think that's what I struggled with, was I just wasn't accepting it as fast as Nolan probably wanted me to. But then when I saw the remainder of the trilogy, I saw the importance of minimizing Gotham, because that's what allowed the Joker to stand out. Because if you don't minimize something else, you're competing. You're watching two competing characters. And in a storyline, for Heath to be who he was, Batman had to be subdued. And I think it also showed Batman can't handle this guy. This guy's another level of a bad guy. And I think Nolan was brilliant to write what you just said, which was subdue the Bat story just for a minute to allow breathing room for the Joker. He's going to take all the air out of the room. And I think that's what happened. And that's what we all left mesmerized with, that performance, you know?
That is such a great point, man. And I think when you look at Batman Begins, for me, that's like the gateway drug to Nolan's Batman. And not just because it's the first, it's because there's a lot more Batman tropes within that one. There's the going off the origin story, which is cool. There's the, you come back to a dark, dirty Gotham that's been run down and it's under a fear gas sort of, not attack to start with, but you know, under the threat of it. And it feels scary. It feels like Nolan
uneasy,
tapped into Tim Burton a little bit.
Yeah,
that's it. Uneasy. That's a great way to articulate it. And it was, whereas with this one, it was, I've never thought about it like that before. It was, this is just a normal city that you and me could live in. And this crazy motherfucker could do this anywhere.
Yeah.
And that is I'd never considered that, mate. I think that's an excellent point.
Well, and listen, one more thing was, if you remember this one, Mark, is that they started this movie with sort of the corporate kicking him out and kind of having, all of his helpers, I'll say it this way, kind of under hostage, right? They couldn't help him. They weren't meant to know what he was going to be. And I liked how they stripped away his power as the Sun. It opened up that a board runs everything. And so it kind of almost made it so Batman doesn't even have his money. Like, so he has to actually rely on help to get the new toys. And I loved it because what it created was the excuse for the new Batmobile, the excuse for some of the new toys, some of the way that they changed the Batarang. I think they wanted to change things. And the only way to make that an excuse was to say he didn't know that these toys existed until he went to take over. And then he found out there's a spelunking suit. And then he found out there's this car. So I felt like it wasn't already in the Batcave ready to go. He had to rediscover his toys to deal with somebody this serious.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I really like that. And it was the fact in The Dark Knight as well, he wasn't even in the mansion. I think that was an interesting.
Yeah.
We didn't see the Batcave. We saw the bunker, which, you know, from the comics, straight out of the comics, he's got bunkers everywhere. And it just contributed to that slightly different Batman feeling. Let's spend a bit of time on the cast, because, I mean, we can only really do Harvey. We can only do Bruce / Batman, and we can only bloody do Joker. We can't, there's no point doing Alfred because Michael Caine's nailed it. There's no point doing Rachel because, you know, underwritten damsel in distress in this movie a little bit. But, you know, the fact of the matter is, if we did any more than these three characters, we'd be here for 4 hours.
Although I gotta say, I do think that I didn't like Maggie as much as the previous Rachel. Right?
No.
I gotta admit, even though we don't talk about her much, I always watch this movie and go, God, I didn't love Maggie's performance as Rachel. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, no, I hear that. I hear that. It was a shame. It felt like a bit part as well. But, you know, yeah, I don't know if that's been addressed elsewhere. Actually, I should probably Google and get into the weeds on that one day. But let's spend a bit of time. Let's start with the White Knight, Harvey Dent. This was interesting for me. It was Aaron Eckhart is great. He's a great actor, very powerful. He's got a lot of screen presence when it comes, you've got to do to stand up against Gary Oldman and to stand up against someone in a bloody bat suit and, the Joker on screen. What I found really interesting about this was how he, right up until probably 2 months out from the launch of this thing, was the sole marketing. It was one of the first movies, if not the first, where they had a proper digital, highly focused, digital, viral, targeted marketing campaign. I Believe in Harvey Dent. And it was outstandingly done. It was really, really good. So to put him front and center early on, that sort of surprised me a little bit. But tell me, how did you feel about the casting? How did you feel he portrayed Harvey Dent / Two-Face?
I want to touch on what you just said. I remember the marketing of that, which is why I was so blown away that the Joker eclipsed everybody, because I thought this whole movie is about Harvey Dent. And as a fan, I was excited to see where Nolan would take that character.
Sorry to interrupt, but just literally before I forget that point, you're absolutely right, because even early on after the Joker scene, the first scene with Harvey is almost his origin story in the courtroom.
Yes.
He stops the gun, he stops the Maroni shooting. There's none of the acid thrown. And at that point, he's like, oh, right. Right. Okay. Now I know this is a different movie. But sorry, yes. I interrupted, man.
No. And I'm glad you did, because that's, you said what I was about to say, which it was a kind of a red herring. I think that's where Nolan and his brother helped him write this. Is where they're genius. They sent a red herring, and if you're a real fan and you've read comics, like you just said, you're like, oh, I see where they're going. They're establishing him, Harvey Dent, in a unique way. And again, I think it left room to breathe so that something else could happen. So as far as casting. Listen, I felt that he was the perfect Harvey Dent, in my opinion. I still, to this day, I love his structure of his face, even just as an actor. Very rigid facial structure allowed for the menacing side to look more menacing when they did the makeup. But as far as like the other, like Gary Oldman, and he's a legend. I mean, these are guys that add so much value to the casting. Because let's be real. I heard a friend say once, oh, anybody could be Batman in the suit, but not everybody could be Bruce Wayne. Not everybody could be a good Bruce Wayne. I mean, even Mark Asquith in the suit will look amazing, right? And I think that people like Oldman and these characters, they add so much so that the main Christian Bale has a lot to draw from. His performance almost doesn't have to be as amazing because they're giving him so much to draw from. And so that's how I sort of felt, like he was surrounded by an amazing cast of other characters. But Harvey Dent, as far as in that movie, I felt he was perfectly cast.
He was just gravitational enough. He had just enough pull.
Yeah.
Aaron, as an actor, to not overshoot, because he's a good looking guy. Mm-hmm. And then you've got Heath Ledger, who's a fantastic looking guy. And then you've got Christian Bale, who's no slouch, is he? So, mm-hmm. To have all these people that are, they're all good looking people. It's a very difficult thing to cast a character like Harvey and not have him overshadow, especially like what you said, when you've got the facial structure, you've got the bone structure, you've got someone that looks in such a good place. But to be, I don't want this to sound how it's going to sound, but to almost be forgettable enough that you could forget that it was him in the
but
movie.
It also helped,
of course it was him.
It also helped to explain why she fell in love with him as well. He's very similar as far as attraction. Mm. He's a debonair man. And I felt like it kind of bridged the gap of why would she be in love with this guy when she has always loved Bruce Wayne? And the fact that you just said, they're equal, but he's just a bit more forgettable. Isn't that kind of the point of the movie, that she's with the guy that's less for her, but in the end becomes the one for her, right? So I think it goes right with what you're saying. Not everybody needs to outshine the star. But let me be honest with you. Prior to Batman, I wasn't a huge Christian Bale fan. I mean, I almost didn't become a huge fan until I saw Ford versus Ferrari and realized how damn good he is. Because I'm just
that,
as a Batman fan, I just gave him a pass because I love Batman. I didn't value that man until I saw, Ford versus Ferrari. And I said, holy crap, that's our Batman. Oh my God, he's amazing. And it made me see him totally different the next time I watched this movie. Because then I applied all that accolade to his performance as Batman.
I fully am. Again, I'm on board with you on that one. Because I was in a similar way. I saw I wasn't a huge fan. And we'll come on to Bruce now, actually. I wasn't a huge fan of Bale's casting as such. Because I thought, like you said, he can be a decent Batman. But I'm not sure he's a great Bruce Wayne. That was my initial thought. Okay. And that held until
I agree.
2 years ago. And then went back, you know, watched The Fighter. What amazed me was The Machinist. He lost all that weight. He went pure method and then bulked up beyond anything he's done before to get into Batman shape, and then did it again and then again. You think, okay, that's dedication. But the older that I've got and the more that I've seen Pattinson, the more that I've seen Affleck, the more that I've watched Keaton return in The Flash, and I'm going to just go straight out there, okay? I don't think there's been a bad Batman casting. I don't think there's been a bad Superman casting. I think they've nailed them all because I've read enough comics to understand eras and types.
I agree.
And when I've gone back and watched these Nolan movies, I respect the casting of Christian Bale a lot more because all he needs to be Bruce Wayne is to be, in the story that Nolan had written, is to be that guy that buys the hotel. That guy that buys the restaurant, that guy that is completely oblivious to saving the financier or the banker or the accountant, whatever he is, Reed, in the Lamborghini. He just needs to be oblivious. And that's all he needs to play. And it was interesting to see him as Batman because I love Ben Affleck as Batman. I thought he was badass.
Me too.
Man, he's a giant. He's tough,
fits the role.
Yeah, he's everything. I could stand him up against Superman, and like they did at San Diego Comic Con, he comes out and you actually think Superman might actually be fucking in a mess here because he's a big, strong, crazy Batman guy. Christian Bale,
small.
If I was to put his Batman up against Henry Cavill, I'm like, Cavill's beating your ass.
Yes.
And it's, for me, it was very much about the story that Nolan was trying to tell. Like you mentioned earlier, it's a story about Batman, but it's more like a story of the world of Batman.
Yes.
What does Batman cause? What's cause and effect? What's morality?
Yes.
What's ethics? So I think Bale, someone like Pattinson and Keaton and Affleck would have almost been too much for this trilogy.
Yes. Yes. And not only are you right there, if you look back at the movie, Christian Bale, he plays... And I don't want to say a curse word on your show, but he plays the perfect a-hole when he's buying the cars.
You can curse, mate.
Yeah, okay. So
I'm a curse. I can't stop.
I want to respect the international audience. But, I always said that when he turns into that snobby Bruce Wayne, that he's still that young kid that just wants to buy the hotel, he has to come off as an a-hole because when he's Batman, it has to be so different how much he cares for the city. Right. And if you realize it, he actually cares so much. That's why he's buying all these corrupt things. That's why he's trying to, and it looks like he's being a cocky jerk, but really he's buying up things so he can better control them. Right. So there's less corruption. People don't think of that when he's buying things up. They make it always look like, oh, I just bought the bank and that's why Superman got his house back. No, if you really look into the story, he's trying to save Gotham. He's trying to save Gotham to the point that he'll even buy things up. But in the back picture, he's actually just trying to control more of it so there's less corruption. So a lot of people don't realize that as a Batman fan. They just always think he's just being, annoying and sarcastic. But listen, I think now watching him so many years later, I couldn't agree more. When I saw Ben Affleck as Batman, I lost my shit. I was like, yo, he's 7 foot tall looking. when he's working out to beat Superman, I think this Bale could not have sold me that he could actually beat Superman like Affleck when he's working out throwing tires and he throws Superman. I'm like, yeah, he could beat him, right? I agree with you that this Batman was the world of Batman. He's torn by Rachel. He's torn by the corporate failure of his business and only Lucius Fox is giving him hope. And I think that that's what made this movie so great and why it set the next one up for success. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, because that conflict is a different type of conflict, isn't it? It's not the conflict of
it's mental.
Like the Affleck version. It's not the conflict of like the Pattinson or the Keaton version. It's more complex.
Yes.
in terms of conflict, which I think is quite interesting. Let's skip on. We could talk about all of this all day, but
I could.
I know that we are going to go deep into this next one. So obviously Heath Ledger as Joker. I remember this casting. It was met with a very similar response to when Keaton was cast as Batman.
Yes.
Because we're coming off the back of Nicholson. We're coming off the back. I don't think even in 2008, who had we had? We'd had Nicholson, obviously, Cesar Romero. We'd had, obviously, Killing Joke had come out. So there's a lot of characterizations, a lot of like the Brian Azzarello comics had come out to darken the Joker a lot. But we weren't,
yeah.
We'd not had like Cameron Monaghan. No, we'd not had anything, had we, before?
That's a gaping hole. Yeah, since Nicholson. But I'd say it left a gaping hole for someone to do something great. So I think it was the perfect storm, because I think that he was not only amazing at the job, but he took advantage of that gap. And he knew he had to reinvent a Joker, because at that time, I believe everyone was saying, not since Nicholson. That's all I ever heard, you know? And of course, if you read comics and things, you're getting more info than the average moviegoer does. So they don't know about that stuff because they're not reading the comics like we are. So I think that not since Nicholson, and I think that provided the gap to say, I'm going to reinvent the Joker, and don't forget that time too, Mark, there was a lot of bombings going on in the US. You know, when they did that bombing of the hospital, that was very reminiscent of the Oklahoma bombings and things. So I think that they took advantage of that sensitivity in America as well and said, this Joker is not going to be afraid to do this level of chaos. And that allowed, I think, the actor to go crazy and say, I'm going to take Nicholson up 10 notches and I'm going to make Batman fear me. Like, truly fear me. And it took the White Knight and the Dark Knight to defeat him. Like, in other words, one alone couldn't do it. And so I think that's what allowed. You were right. Since Nicholson, there just wasn't anything substantial.
That's huge, man. And do you think there is that? We see this a lot online, a lot of not necessarily rumors, but a lot of speculation. So I just want to get your take on this. As I'm in the UK, we've got a very different sensitivity to things like this.
Yes.
Do you think the subtext to Joker in this was PTSD as a veteran? Do you, because there was the demolitions expertise, the tactical strategic expertise, there was the three layers of planning, there was the firearms, the knowledge of the firearms and the ambush points. There was a lot that seemed to suggest it. Is that, how does that come across from a US perspective?
So that is such a great, if not the best question you've asked. I 100% feel that it was a PTSD, but I also felt like Nolan was almost saying, like, anyone could do this, guys. Anyone. Like, I'm using the Joker as an example, but everything he's doing can be done by someone and has been recently done by someone. And I think it really, aside from being a great movie, I think it made people sensitive to hospitals can be blown up and buildings can be blown up and the planning and the dark side of people who plan dark things. I think that's one thing I love about this movie. When you first told me about it, I was hoping we'd hit this point. If we didn't, I felt like we're not mature Batman fans. Batman, although he is a super character, he is a comic book character. I think this specific movie was 100% a reflection, which is probably why they used a real city, a reflection to remind us that the chaos of a Joker can happen in real life and that we have no Batman to protect us. And I think that that's how I felt. Like, I had worked for the police department at that time. I was doing homicide video for 7 years at the Orlando Police Department. And when I left that movie, I did feel like that. Like, they just gave us a very fun reminder, because the movie was fun, but the point was real, that this chaotic guy could exist and we would have no superhero. We need to be more careful in the world. So yeah, I agree with you 100%.
Yeah, that's fascinating, man. We don't necessarily see that context in the UK quite as clearly. I feel like we take things I don't want to say more literally, but I feel like we're not exposed to some of the levels of sensitivity that you guys are in the US, just because I think it's just not as prevalent here in the UK, sadly. And I just thought it was interesting to look at how, almost how he'd positioned the city and its people right at the end. You know, we'll talk about the storyline and so on, but right at the end, everything, the entire movie boiled down to plain and simple morality. And the the White Knight, the Dark Knight, the Joker, the chaos in the middle, but the fact that, you know, everyone had to operate in the gray a little bit. Harvey was so clean yes. and white and transparent, but he had to come over to the gray a little bit. And actually, Bruce, he stepped away from being so dark because he saw the little glimmer of hope that maybe someone could do this in the open and they could be other the hero me. Without the mask on. And it was, this is why I think the scores are interesting that we'll probably get to later, because it just, the layers in this movie for a, dude, this is a damn superhero movie.
I know, right?
What the heck?
But yet you the know? Joker controlled them both. He manipulated
everyone as well. The mob.
He manipulated everyone. So he manipulated the White Knight and the Dark Knight. You know, so what does that tell you about his level of, I don't give a fuck, right? He's I'm going to ruin this whole city from the top down, you know, including its savior. So yeah, listen, man, when we chit chat, you're going to make me want to watch it again.
Oh, man, honestly.
I think it's one of the best of all the Batman movies. I was happy you chose this one because the trilogy is amazing, but I've always had this one as a standout until the more modern ones, which I love. Hopefully we could talk about those in another day. But listen, I would really encourage your audience to not just hear this show, but to go watch it after we're done and maybe look for some of the cool things we're saying that as fans we're noticing that maybe they would never notice. You know, especially like you said, you don't experience that type of stuff in the UK. Maybe now your listeners can go, now knowing the sensitivities that Neil talked about, let me rewatch that again and see if that would make me more uneasy, you know?
Yeah, I think it's important to appreciate some of the talent that goes into structuring these stories and to layering these characters and these inflection points within a story. I think that can sometimes go under the radar. Now, we are going to, in a second, get on to one of my favorite parts of these episodes, which is the high points and the low points. I like to pick a couple of highs, a couple of lows, and then we go through and pick our standout, I suppose our standout point within the movie. But before we do that, I am just going to take a little second to tell you, the ever-present listener, about this.
Hello there.
We would be honored if you would join us.
If you are enjoying this episode, I have absolutely no doubt that you will love our sister show, Spark of Rebellion. With news, views, and a little bit of comedy, it is your weekly dose of everything Star Wars. And it's intended to keep busy people like you and I up to date with everything happening in a galaxy far, far away. Of course, it's available in your podcast app of choice or at sparkofrebellion.com. Neil, let's get into our highs and into our lows, because we've all got our favourites, haven't we? So I want to get just a couple of what... I mean, this is tough in this movie, man, because it's like the whole thing is up here.
Every scene, but, yeah.
Yeah. Which bit of the movie did you like? What were the highs? Well, minute one to minute 136. Let's just pick a couple of your high points, some of the highest standout points for you. What are a couple of bits that stand out in your memory?
Oh, Lord, I knew you were going to ask me this, and I struggled so much to make one or two of these that were real. Okay, so because the child fan in me versus the adult fan in me. So the child fan in me seeing the Batmobile change from a traditional vehicle to a freaking tank just damn near made me lose my mind. And the line where he's like, does this come in black? That literally made me go, ah! Okay, that was one. But as a mature viewer, it was for me the scene where he's in the cell with the Joker and we're about to see Batman break his code. He is so mad and he's so angry and the Joker has driven him to a point of going beyond his value, his core value of not killing. That was a high moment for me. One of the highest moments. And then, you know, a subtle moment. This is probably the storyteller, the filmmaker in me also was when him and sort of Gary Oldman, just the development of their bond when they're on that, when he's on that, oh my God, what are those stairs called on the side of a building? When he meets him for the first
fire
time.
Escape.
Thank you. When he's on the fire escape and he sort of introduces himself and, you know, right, they're talking and Gary Oldman's not even looking at him, right? He's just looking away and talking to him from behind. Little scenes like that just made me love the relationship that they're creating between these two. But definitely the cell is one of my standout moments. There's a million of them. with the Joker, but as far as Batman, I felt that those were my personal, some of my personal highlights.
Yeah, I hear those, man. And I think for me, it was, for me, there were a couple that really stood out. That cell scene is just next level, you know, superheroing. The acting on Heath Ledger is wild in that. It is unreal acting. And what I loved about that was how the characterizations of them were so good. You know, it was like, don't hit me in the head. I'll get all groggy and forget what I'm here to be interrogated about. And Batman gives him the hardest punch in the hand and all he does is just goes, there you go, that's better. And I just thought, holy crap, like what a way to write that sequence. And there were a couple of those bits for me that were on that par. There was the fundraiser sequence where he was, because I think that tapped into the Joker being the Joker, not giving you the proper origin story. You know, we're keeping the mystery and, you know, spinning two or three of these. But the first meeting of Batman and Joker, but then how Joker uses that against him later because he sees him dive out the window. I thought that was a huge, huge moment as well. And then another one for me was, it was something I think that tapped into every version of on-screen Batman that we've seen. It tapped into the Adam West in a little way. It tapped into Keaton, certainly tapped into like BVS before BVS had happened, and BVS probably, you know, ripped off this one a little bit. And certainly the Pattinson one in terms of how visceral it was the whole sequence at the end in the high rise where he realizes that the clowns are actually the hostages and he has to go out and be brutal Batman, but in a way that saves everyone. And I was like,
while he's being hunted. That is good.
Yeah, unbelievable. And just extremely well written. I'm gonna ask you for more of a standout character piece in a second. So just a bit in this movie that stands out from a character perspective, because I wouldn't normally ask this, but I think this movie warrants it. But before we do that, any low points, anything that you necessarily weren't keen on or that you think might have been executed better or just anything that didn't feel good?
Well, I mentioned it earlier. I just didn't like Maggie's portrayal, and I felt like it took away some opportunity to better get the love story, to get how his heart was torn that she's with someone else, because I didn't love her portrayal enough. I just felt like, I felt like what you said earlier, like it was treated as not an important role when to me, she's pivotal in every way. So I felt that that was one low. And other than that, I don't think there was too many lows. You know, maybe some of the corporate stuff, I felt like, okay, they're kind of making the CEO a bit of a bad guy, but I didn't ever feel like he really threatened Bruce in any way. And I could tell they were trying to show his manipulation of trying to take the company away. I felt like that was a low, meaning more in the sense of it didn't do anything. If they removed that scene from the movie, I might not have even missed it because there were so many highs, right? And that's kind of where I felt as far as lows, because there were so many highs. I mean, when the Joker burns the money, when he goes in and talks to the gangsters and like damn near blows them up and kills them all. Like, you know, like, it's just so many amazing things that those lows, there's not too many, but those are my two.
I love it. Yeah, I don't disagree with you so much on certainly the Rachel stuff. And that would be my only low point as well. It's not even a low point. It's like an 8 out of 10 point. You know, it's one of those, it's such a difficult movie, you're nitpicking. And for me, I think it was because I had that bee in my bonnet about like Batman wouldn't quit over a girl. Like maybe in some of the comics characterizations, maybe he might get a little bit hung up on a girl, but he ain't quitting. If anything happens to his girl, if anything happens where his girl pisses him off, he just gets more Batman.
Yeah.
He's not getting less Batman. He gets more Batman, you know? And that was the only thing that before I really thought about it, and this is only recently, I thought, that didn't feel Batman. But actually, within the story context, from Batman Begins right through to Rises, of this being, I'm a temporary fix and I'm going to, Rachel's waiting for me, you know, that whole, I thought the Alfred burning the letter thing was beautiful. I thought that was really well done. And, you know, Harvey didn't know about Bruce. Bruce didn't know about Harvey. I just thought that was a very respectful thing to do from a character's perspective.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you look at Dark Knight Rises and it's the more I look at it, it wasn't about the girl. it was about the idea of being able to get out of this life and yes. his job having been finished. And that's why in Rises, he ends up with Selena and that's his life done. He hands yes. it over to Blake. And it's and so I think I misunderstood that. That would have been my only low point. But I think that's on me, if that makes sense.
No, I couldn't agree more. And I don't want to say, in case she's listening, hey, Maggie, I love you as an actress. it's just that I felt like I don't understand. And I felt like they should not have changed the character. I know that's Hollywood, that's contracts. But, you know, I look at these, like, and I'm sure you do as well. Like, we get stuck on these characters. Like, I don't know how I'll ever see another Iron Man, ever. I don't care who they pick. And so I felt like it was important to me that they kept that arc going, and I felt like they lost it, and they kind of minimized her role until the end when she's going to get blown up, and then her value goes through the roof because now she's valuable to both guys, right? So in the end, they kind of tried to save the arc of her storyline and her value in the overall picture. But listen, like you said it best, there's so many good scenes. It's hard to pick out a low. Maybe the credits, the end credits were low because I didn't want it to end.
Although I will say, like that was one of the goosebump moments that I've had in cinema was at the end, was driving up the ramp with the bike and, you know, Gordon's got the voiceover, you know, Our Dark Knight. I was like, damn.
Here we go.
Yeah, well, that was it. And it was a here we go. I said this on the Man of Steel episode to Drew because I was like, I scored that at like, I can't remember what it was. It was something similar to this, quite lower than you would expect it. And I said it's because it felt at the end, it's like, oh, here we go. We've got 10 more films and it's going to be epic. And then obviously that didn't work. But it felt the same here. I was like, damn, even though I've just seen 2.5 hours of absolutely badass brilliance, I'm leaving the theater thinking, oh, here we go. That's not the end. Which I thought was really interesting. Let's pick up a couple of, well, if you've got one or two standout character bits, and it's a difficult one to ask because it's similar to the high points, but I'll go first because I think it might be better to illustrate what I mean by this one. For me, there's one point in the movie where you realize just purely based on a character what you are in for. And it's the character moment. It's a throwaway little thing. It's in the scene that you mentioned where the Joker sat with all the mob bosses and he's wanting to get the money back from, is it Lynn? And he says, you got to kill the Batman. That's the only way to do it. He's upended you. He's got you hiding. You got to kill the Batman.
Yes.
And one of the gangsters tells him he's crazy. And for the briefest split second, he looks at him and says, I'm not crazy. And for that one split second, the Joker disappears.
Yes.
And the person that is the Joker behind the Joker is there for a second, because that's the one thing that he won't let anyone say to him or let him believe himself. Because if he does, he's as bad as the rest of the world that he's yes. trying to correct. And God, that was for me, moment. I was like, yeah, I couldn't believe it. I was like, damn, that now that is acting. That is acting.
So, wow. So, okay, because yours is so good, I think I'll just stay on that one and just add to it the look on his face when they tell him he's crazy. If you look at that very brief reaction on his face as an actor, not only did the line, I'm not crazy, matter, but if you guys ever watch it, look at his facial expression before he says the line. It's like you just said, it's like a trigger. His face literally changes and then he says the line. That's an amazing scene to pick, bro, because I can't say I had one ready to go because there's just so many big ones that the small ones seem to fall away. But that one with the mob bosses, that's why I brought it up. It was just him versus the world, not just him versus Batman in that room. It's him versus every bad guy in this town, now, every bad guy that Batman still hasn't dealt with. And he's in there negotiating with them and taking on the biggest job ever, right? Kill the Bat. Who can do that? And he's talking like he could do it with ease. But yeah, you're right. That brief second, if you guys pause it and just look at Heath's reaction, I think it's why he is who he is, why he was the best Joker to this day. I think the best Joker yet.
I do not disagree, my friend. Do not disagree. Now, to wrap up over the next probably 10, 15 minutes, I want to talk about things like the music, the sound effects, how the movie has aged, but then revisit a little bit of the scoring. And we'll do that at the end. So we're gonna discuss what we would score this had we watched everything that we've watched up to today. If we had never seen The Dark Knight, if we were seeing everything in the MCU, we'd seen BVS, we'd seen Man of Steel, we'd seen everything in the DCEU, we'd watched every other Nolan movie, we've seen everything, but we've not seen The Dark Knight, we watch it in a theatre today, we are going to rescore it with all of that context. However, before I get to the music, the sound effects, and the final rewatch scores, I'm going to ask something that I wouldn't normally ask, and it's pertinent to this movie. It's very, very important. How do you think the trilogy would have played out had Heath Ledger not sadly passed away? How different would it have been? How big of an impact would that character have had? Let's go there for five.
Dude, that's my saddest thing is I couldn't wait to see what he was going to do the next round. I felt like Batman barely could handle you this round. What is he going to do with you next? Had he not passed away, I think we would have had probably two of the most iconic performances ever for a character that's not a real person, right? Like, I think he would have probably gone even darker. I think he would have taken it to another level with the mental side of it. I think they would have delved deeper. I think I would have loved to see him make Batman damn near quit and cower and have to find himself at the bottom of a cave somewhere, like literally better refind himself or he's not going to make it. And I would have loved, and they'll never do this, I would have loved if he finally would then need Robin or somebody else, right? Somebody to get him through it. Like, I think it would have created an opportunity to bring back not a sidekick, but like a real assist, right? He needs somebody even greater than the White Knight because this guy is unstoppably bad. So I got so sad when he passed away because I knew that was the end of that. And you know what was funny? I thought, how are they going to top this now? They can't. And I think they still haven't.
I agree.
I think that they, I venture to say they won't. So, you know, I just would have loved to see an even darker Joker, like just literally make Batman want to almost stop. I would have loved to see that movie and then let that birth the beginning of needing help, that I cannot continue to do this alone. And then I've never seen them take Robin beyond Robin into who he became after. I'll leave that to you guys to go find out in the comics. But yeah, man, listen, I don't know, but I was so saddened when he passed away because I knew it was the end of something amazing. But isn't that how God works, right? He gives you something amazing and then it's taken away so you can value and appreciate it forever and ever.
Yeah, it was such a sad time as well as a fan. You know, here's a little trivia for you. I was actually in Soho in New York City when it happened. I walked past the block where all the police cars and ambulances were outside Heath's hotel. And I was like, what is going on there? That's really weird. And then we got back to our hotel 4 hours later and saw it on the news. And sure enough, it was that block. I recognized the stores and recognized where it was and the foyer, well, not the foyer, but the entrance to the hotel. And it was, the mood was somber, man. And it was, I agree. It was interesting to see how they'd left it. It clearly didn't kill him on purpose. The character, sorry, of Joker didn't kill him on purpose. It was very much a beginning. Joker begins, if you like, wherein, you know, he said, you're going to have to kill me in order to make me stop.
There's only
you.
One ending, exactly.
That's it. You complete me. And I'd written down in my notes, you know, Batman's morality is painted as the problem. And if you want to stop the Joker, you got to break it. And that is so true to the comics. You've seen it in like The Dark Knight Returns. He kills the Joker and he finally gets there. And you've seen it for years, 70, 80 years, where that's always been the problem. Always been the problem. You know, he cripples a Robin and kills a Robin. And he's, because there's no recourse, basically, because Batman just won't do it.
I would have loved to see that. What was the line? An unstoppable force.
Yeah, meets an immovable object.
I mean, that defines the whole movie.
Yeah, it really does. And it was the other one as well. We'll wrap up on the. I mean, I could talk about this all day, mate, but we'll wrap up on the movie per se. But I think the other line that's lived with me for a long time, because I think it applies in a lot of areas of life, is the Harvey Dent quote. You either die a villain or nope.
Or you live long enough to become one.
That's the one. I couldn't remember it then. Die a hero or live long enough to see yourself become the villain. And it's such a big narrative for this entire movie, but also I think in a lot of other parts of life as well. You know, you sort of, I think it shows how you sometimes fall out of grace with people who are a little bit more fickle than, you know, the long-term friends and people that you've got in your life. I think it just shows the fickle nature of the world that we can live in, that superficial nature of things, which I think is quite a fascinating commentary as well. Let's get on to a couple of things. Number one, you talked about like the sound effect. Let's get into the music on this one. So I didn't realize this when I put this series together, dude, but basically Hans Zimmer and John Williams have scored every single one of the movies in this season.
Yeah.
Return of the Jedi, Dark Knight, Superman, Man of Steel, and Jurassic Park. And obviously, it's hard not to be a Hans Zimmer fan. So, what do you think of the soundtrack to this movie?
Dude, I don't even know how to answer that other than I still listen to the instrumental all the time. It's funny. I was thinking about if you watch the beginning, it's so eerie, right? But then fast forward to the scene where they have the Joker's head out of the car like a dog and his hair's wet and the car is just kind of going left and right. If you listen to the music, when it changes right there, the mode changed, the way that they let it, the movie breathe. And then they went into the chase audio. Matter of fact, I looked this up. It says here that Hans Zimmer based the Joker's theme around two notes that would become increasingly adulated as the track progressed. His goal was to get you increasingly frustrated and uneasy as you heard it. So I felt it was a masterclass in manipulating emotion through music for a superhero movie. And I felt that that soundtrack could have as equally been in a dramatic narrative movie with no problem. I felt like it was better than anything I would have expected for a superhero movie, if that makes any sense.
It does, it does. And one thing that struck me with it is that I think it's for that reason, is that it felt like it was scored like a big drama movie, not like a, well, let's take Hans Zimmer and let's take John Williams. Star Wars, Indiana Jones, Jurassic Park, Man of Steel. It didn't feel Batman 89, for example, Danny Elfman. You had each one of those, you always had and you always have a theme, which we know we've got a Joker theme, we know we've got a Batman theme, whatever. But they're very difficult to identify. There's no da 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 or da 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 da. There's none of that. And what I think for me it does is it really, it's the most appropriate superhero music that I've heard, because as you said, it's elevated and it feels like it's not been scored around. Here's the Joker theme. Every time he comes on screen, you're going to hear this and you're going to know it's that, like Princess Leia walks on and you know it's Princess Leia because the theme's on, and the same with Yoda and the same with Luke or whatever. But with this, it was more circumstantial, it was more situational. It was every time you saw Batman on the top of the Hong Kong building, on the top of a skyline, on the top of something about to pounce into action at the end, you had the two notes, the da da, you know, you had it, and it, you couldn't even really sing it. It was, but you know that's Batman, but it wasn't, I'm not going to go around whistling it. And it felt creatively on purpose, like it was there to add to the elevation of this as a piece of work that wasn't just like, here's a sequel to a Batman movie. It was, here's a Christopher Nolan film that happens to have Batman in it.
And it was very intentional. James Howard worked with Hans Zimmer and they actually divided the soundtrack. So James Howard worked on only Harvey Dent's music. Hans Zimmer focused on Batman and the Joker. So when you're hearing the changes between the White Knight and the Dark Knight, it's a different composer. And a lot of people don't even realize that. They don't realize that. And if you look it up, whether it's in Wikipedia or other places, Hans Zimmer wanted to focus so much on the eerie weirdness, he actually assigned James Newton Howard to do Harvey Dent's part. And so that's why you kind of feel that difference. It truly is a different, for that moment anyway, it is a different person. Now, Hans Zimmer, of course, oversaw it all, but to get that different inflection, it is truly another composer. Like, that's what makes it so amazing. And so, like you said, it goes back to what you just said. It felt so unique and so non-familiar because it really was divided. And it allowed Hans Zimmer to really hone in on this eeriness, this different sound that had never existed for the Joker before. And so, little trivia for anybody who's not really a huge fan like us, but something I was always excited when I learned that there was actually another composer working on Harvey Dent's part.
I did not know that, mate. Yeah, that's pretty cool. That does explain a lot, because the flavors carry over. Even it doesn't matter if, I guess, if you try not to carry them over, I guess there's always going to be influence there. So that's super interesting, man.
He had worked on Batman Begins as well, but Hans right. Zimmer wanted to keep him involved, just not as the main composer. So he only assigned him the one character, so that way you would feel the difference, because it is truly a genuine soundtrack from another person.
That is insane. Yeah, I love that. That's little things like that you wouldn't. Yeah. You wouldn't.
Told you I'm a Batman
think.
Fan, man.
Yeah, I love it, mate. I absolutely love it. All right, we are going to get to the big one in a second. How we would score this had we just walked out the theater today, having seen it for the first time. However, the last question that I want to ask you is, how do you feel this movie's aged, man? Both from a technical standpoint, I watched this in Ultra HD 4K. It looked absolutely stunning still. But also from a narrative standpoint, a story standpoint, from a Batman perspective, how has this movie, The Dark Knight, 2008, how has it aged over the last 15 years?
I feel like it has not aged. When I was going to do this podcast with you, I watched it again, and I felt like it was a today movie. I felt like it was, because Nolan is just a masterful director. Like you said, the cinematography, the VFX even are holding up pretty steady to today's things. And of course, the makeup, the practical makeup, instead of doing like the VFX on the faces and things. And so I think has aged so well, so gracefully, that it does not feel like an 89. It feels old. When I watch any of those, I watched them all, by the way, with my daughter recently, all of them.
Love it.
They feel older. She even said it, Daddy, those feel old, but the Dark Knight series still feels very modern. Although I will say, whether it's Affleck or the brand new Batman that just came out, I never thought they could touch these. But I got to say, man, they've taken it to a new level. And that has affected my rating, which I'll give when you ask, of how it's changed my rating from back then, when I thought that was the top of the chain. I think that some things have happened today that has changed my rating a bit from that 7.5. But it has aged gracefully. I still love it. And I will watch it again probably as soon as we're done today.
I love that, mate. Yeah, and I would agree that it's not, it doesn't seem to have aged, because it feels like there are so many practical effects. I know there are VFX, but there's not that much CGI when you compare it to the superhero genre that kicked off in 2008, in earnest, in the Marvel universe. And I remember watching a documentary of how they did that, you know, when they flipped the articulated lorry, they flipped the entire truck. Remember watching how they practically did that on a street in Chicago, and I was like, what?
Yeah. Nolan loves real explosions. Nolan loves the optics to be real.
And you can tell, because I think that stops it aging as much as it could do. So yeah, I think it's aged beautifully. And I think because it's relatively recent as well, 15 years, when you're doing a lot of practical effects, 4K was there. You know what? He's known for shooting on like certain IMAX cameras as well, which I think he did with this one, which was still in the midst of IMAX, and it still all looks fantastic. So yeah, I think it's aged pretty well. Now we are going to wrap up. If you've enjoyed this, go and check out the other episodes, which we dive deep into Return of the Jedi, Superman the Movie, Man of Steel, and Jurassic Park with some wonderful co-hosts. You can do that at itshowold.com or in your podcast app of choice. Just search for It's How Old. But let's wrap, man, with our scores as if we'd seen it today. Now, this is going to be interesting, because I'm keen to do a little bit of discussion on this, because we've had Batman versus Superman, we've had The Batman, we even had The Joker with Joaquin Phoenix in there. I'm very interested to get context on this from you as well. So hit me with your reasoning, your logic, talk us through some of that, and then give me the score as if you'd left the theater today for the first time.
So listen, when I first rated it, just as a fan, I told you it was a 10 for Ledger and a 7.5 for the overall film. Having seen now how much they've done, how well I believe they've taken care of the Batman universe. I know a lot of people freaked out with Affleck. He turned out to be amazing. I don't care what you say. I think that, and I really got scared with Pattinson thinking, oh my God, where are they going? I loved it. And so now, especially the most recent one, when they returned him to being more of a detective, but they still protected the relationship with the commissioner. They still tastefully introduced Selina, and then they also went through the reinvention of the vehicles and the beginning of the motorcycle. I felt like once again, just like Nolan, reinvented the vehicles, reinvented the toys. So now, all that being said, Affleck being probably my visibly favorite, because I want to see the Arkham Batman come to life at some point. I would then rate this one probably more of a 7 than a 7.5. And you probably say less. I say, well, the last one was pretty stellar, man. And if you look at where they've taken the Joker, thinking they would never replicate that performance, and I felt that that performance has not been replicated, but has surely been equaled to some capacity, or at least very close. I felt like the Joker, the new Joker, is just pretty amazing in his own right. I just feel like in the big picture, it takes my rating down just a half a point, not a lot, because now there is still more, and I would say a little some better, right? So I give it a solid 7. Overall, in the whole universe of it, only a 0.5 drop. I still leave a 10 for Ledger as an individual person. I will never change that. And I just want to say, as a fan, I am 50. I just turned 50. I've been in love with the Batman universe since I was a tiny little kid. My daughter eats, sleeps, and breathes it. We love where they're headed. I'm excited of what she'll see as I get older. I'm excited that maybe they'll finally give us Batman Beyond one day. And I just think that it has been well taken care of. And I think that at this very moment, they leave a lot to be discovered for us Batman fans. And I love just to kind of see where they're going with the new Batman. I'm excited to see where they delve. So yeah, I'll give it a solid 7, man.
I love it, my friend. And I think that reasoning is very, very sound. I'm going to do similar reasoning because, like, I'm a fan of Man of Steel. I'm a fan of Ben Affleck. I thought BVS was a good film, and I don't give a shit what anyone says about the Martha moment. Mate, what baffles me is, out of all the comic book history, no one's ever gone, do you know that your mum and she's called the same as your mum, yeah? No one's ever addressed it. And then they address it in the movie as the only thing that will snap a deranged Bruce Wayne out of it is his parents. And everyone's like, oh, that's a silly thing to do. And you're like, what? If you understand the character at all, that is possibly the only thing that would stop him. And I just, it blew my mind that people hated that.
Oh, no, I loved it.
But we're going to have to do a BVS one now.
Yes, all day.
We got to do that. For me, you're right, the eras of Batman have progressed, they've become different. So like you said, the Affleck Batman was very much a Dark Knight Returns, Arkham City, Arkham Origins, Arkham Asylum-esque Batman. Very visceral, very detective-like, but big hulking, he's going to get you. The Pattinson one was very, I don't want to say New 52, it felt a bit New 52, a bit Gotham by Gaslight, a little bit like Year One, Frank Miller.
Yes, Year One.
And it felt very, they all felt very different. Whereas like the Keaton one felt like the bits of Azzarello, but very much like the Jim style in a sort of off the back of the Neil Adams darkness with the Ra's al Ghul darkness, the dark, dirty goth. There was a lot of that influence, 70s, 80s influence. So for me, this era of Batman, like I sort of compartmentalize it. If I was ranking this in a list of all my Batman movies, the score would be different to what I'm giving it now, right? So I give it a 7 out of 10 to start with. As a piece of cinema, as a superhero movie, as something that I genuinely have not watched for 6 years, and then I sat down and watched it last week and then again the night before last, dude, I'm like a 10 because I was hooked on the whole thing. And I didn't want it to be a 10. I wanted it to be like, okay, I'll marginally increase it just because I see what's been done well, but I genuinely could not find anything that was bad. And I was sort of annoyed that I couldn't. I wanted it to be like, go on, then I'll give it an 8.5. Go on, why not? And dude, I couldn't find anything from my standpoint. And do you know what I think this rescoring really sums up? Is that we live in an era of absolute abundance. Like you've scored all the other Batmans really highly. And I've scored all the other Batmans really highly. We've just approached it from a different standpoint. And we've come to what is essentially the same conclusion, which is what a really good time to be a Batman fan. We've had everything.
Yes. Yes.
What a stunning time to be a geek, man.
And that's why I oddly, as much as I thought initially my rating would go up, I mean, on a personal level, all by itself, maybe, but in comparison to all of them in my mind, like especially the ones that have come since, you know, even like BVS in particular, and then now the new one, it just made me realize there's a lot of good happening too. And it's hard for me to go higher on the other one because there were some things I didn't love. But I still wanted to give it a high enough rating that it earned just on its own as a standalone. I would probably given it a 9, but in comparison to the most recent one, which for some reason I absolutely loved. And then of course, Affleck, which I really loved. I just felt like now in the midst of those three, there's a few things, right? I love where they're going. Yeah. So where they're going is exciting for me as a fan. And I'm just hoping that, hey, whoever's listening, if you're the caretaker of the Batman universe, Mark and I are just saying, be careful, but keep it up, right? We're in a good place. We're honoring, you know, the creators, but at the same time, I think they're starting to explore more. And I love seeing where they're going. And then visually, come on. We got the best character.
That last Batman film was visually unreal, and it was wasn't it such a departure from like The Dark Knight? Not necessarily Begins, because that was dark and dirty, but Rises and The Dark Knight, like to see Batman fighting in daytime, in the comics do not see that, you know? And it was, so the visual tonality between the two were wildly different, but stunning. But the Pattinson Batman was...
You could pause anywhere and it's a good screen grab. It's a good screensaver. Any scene.
That's exactly it. That is a great way to put it. All right, my friend, this has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you, Neil Galati, for joining me here on It's How Old.
Thanks for having me, brother.
You beautiful listener out there, thank you for joining me. Like I said, this is a podcast that's just, it's a bit of fun. We enjoy doing it. I've got some great friends co-hosting with me. So if you are a bit of a pop culture nerd like we are, go and check out not only Return of the Jedi, but Superman the Movie, Man of Steel, and Jurassic Park. And if you've got any suggestions, what movies, what music, what games, what TV shows have got big anniversaries coming up over the next couple of years that you'd like me to dig into, just give me a shout over on Twitter at It's How Old. Until the next time, enjoy your pop culture, enjoy whatever you do, and just keep loving the things that you love, and tell your friends about it, because guess what? They'll love it too. Until the next time, bye bye for now.